Everything was going great, right up until the moment it wasn't. Hi guys, this is Bonnie Somerville, and welcome to Second Act. I'm so excited for you to be here and join this journey with me. I've been wanting to do this for a really long time, and this is a journey that I'm doing because basically I'm in my second act right now, or more like, probably 30th, but basically the idea for Second Act came after I had a very, very, very long run in the business as a model, a musician, a singer, a songwriter, got my first record deal when I was 18, moved to LA when I was 21, found myself 5 years later on the biggest show in the world, Friends, and my career just kind of went boom, 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 boom. I couldn't not get a job. I would turn around and I'd get a pilot or another pilot or two pilots, and I was always the girl that had a job. And then all of a sudden one day, turning in my 40s, everything just kind of poof, fell apart. Bad relationship, death in the family, got let go from a huge TV drama, let go of a 20-year management team that were like family to me, and it all just kind of hit the fan, and I thought, who am I? What am I doing? Like, am I even an actress anymore? What do I do now? And a really dear friend of mine said to me, you know what? You just need to find your second act, man. Like, you just need to find something else. And I thought, oh, wow, that's a really, I like that concept because everyone has a story about that. Everyone has had to leave a job or pick themselves up after a death or a divorce or being laid off or getting canceled, fired, whatever. And I thought, there's so many stories out there and I want to hear them and I want to help inspire people. So welcome. I'm so glad you're here with me. Before I introduce my guest, who I'm so excited about, please subscribe to Second Act wherever you get your podcasts, share on your social channels, and please leave a 5-star review because I really want to keep doing this. And you can follow me on Instagram at secondact_pod. Not hard to find. It's my big mug right in the corner in the left. I'm also Bonz Somerville on Instagram. Yeah, because I'm cool. Anyway, my first guest, very, very, very excited about, is a very dear old friend of mine. I've known him since 2005. We're a month apart, and he's an awesome dude. And he was there when I got my very first drama, leading role on a show called NYPD Blue. Maybe you've heard of it. Just a little cop show, won about, 22 Emmys. Little show. Jesse was promoted the year that I got my job to exec producer director. Even though he had grown up on the set, we bonded and we became really, really close, and he helped me a lot and has since helped me throughout the years. So I'm so excited to welcome Jesse Bochco to the show. Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I am so excited right now. I can barely sit still. Today I have on one of my most favorite people in the world. That's not bullshit. He is a director. He's an exec producer. He's a writer. He's a bon vivant. Would you say you're a bon vivant? A little bit?
Sure.
He is one of my best friends. I've known him for almost 20 years. And his name is Jesse Bochco. Hi, Jesse.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What are you up to these days? How's COVID world?
Oh, it's the best. I'm good. You know, we're just kind of, here's the thing. I've decided that we just need to figure out a way to do this and sort of lean into the reality, but live our lives, because I think we're looking at this for the foreseeable future, and really? Hopefully it's not too long, but I think we're looking at least another 6 months of this, and maybe more. Oh. But so for me, without being a drag or a bummer, just trying to figure out what works. You know, I'm all good wearing my mask in public. I wish everybody else would. I like to eat in the outdoor areas if I can. I like to see my friends and yards and beaches and things.
Right.
So that part, look, it's hard, and depression does set in at times. But
yes.
I think it's a really doable thing, and I'm feeling blessed that it's not as hard for me as it is for a lot of people that I hear and read about. However, this is the scariest, weirdest time I've ever seen in this country in my life. And
yeah, I mean, it's like
I just think it's one of the weirdest times
ever.
Scary, weird, ever.
Especially because you have a new, child. I mean, a pretty relatively new human being, and then all this.
Yeah, she doesn't smell like new car anymore, but she's pretty new. She's 2.5, and and actually, she's more fun now than she ever was.
She's so actually the most stylish. Just so you know, if you ever look at Jesse Bacho's Instagram, his wife has her in the most stylish hipster. If anyone's going to make a mask work, it's little Stevie.
Bonnie, why do you assume Ray puts her in that stuff? And how long have you known me to know that I've got...
Actually, you work... Yeah. No, you have good style. You always have good style.
It's a collab.
I remember that when we first met. You had really good style. Speaking of first meet, can you believe that I got my first leading role on Jesse's show, NYPD Blue, in 2005. I had never done a drama before. And I was replacing somebody in final season. Who was I replacing again? I forgot her name.
Charlotte.
Right?
Charlotte Ross.
Yes. And I came in there and I was like, the greatest job of my entire life. But I met you. We were like instant, like best friends, literally right off the block. I didn't even know who you were. You were so nice to me and helping me. And you're like, are you okay? Are you cool? And then I look at your chair and it's like Bochco. And I was like, oh. He's big time.
Yeah, I didn't do that with the guys that came in.
Of course not. No, but you were unbelievable. I was a nervous wreck. I really was a nervous wreck because that was my
grandfather's favorite.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You just got promoted. Wasn't that your promotion to exec producer?
I was a co-executive producer. I think maybe it was just a producer. I don't remember for sure, but. I was brand new to the whole thing. I directed one episode of television before that. And I literally didn't know what I was doing.
What episode was
it? So I did an episode of a show called Philly with Kim Delaney. It was Kim Delaney after NYPD Blue.
I remember
her own series. And the show, when they really realized the show was ill-fated, they were like, wow, let the kid direct one. Rick Wallace and Kevin Hooks, who are mentors of mine, I was running the ADR stage. I was doing post-production. And they were like, we think you should direct one of the last episodes. And I said, oh, no. I can't do that.
Awesome.
And they said, yeah, you can do it. Come on. They're like, don't worry. You know, we're not going to let you fall on your face.
And you did, like, just for people, maybe if they've had their heads under rocks, like, you grew up in the business. You did everything, right? You did everything growing up. Like, you did so many different
jobs. I was around.
Yeah, you were around it all.
Oh, yeah. I was around it growing up. And then, when I was 22 and I wasn't nearly done with college, I did a year at film school and I sort of faked going to university before that. It was more kind of like
me too.
I majored in bong loads, but I went to San Francisco Art Institute for a year, and my girlfriend at the time and I were living together, and then rather unceremoniously, she decided she didn't want to be my girlfriend anymore, and rather than stay in school and do the right thing and find my own life, I said, well, screw this, I'm going home, and I went back to LA, and I got a job, you know, getting coffee and shit for people and quickly into post-production. And I learned everything from post-production, to be honest. I learned more about directing and post-production than I did from watching other people direct.
Really? What was that first, your first show that you remember growing up on, like the very first set, like when you were a baby? Was that Hill Street Blues?
Yeah, Hill Street Blues for sure.
That's so rad.
I have a very vague recollection before that. My oldest, dearest friend in the world is Jake Paltrow, and his dad's Bruce Paltrow, the late great Bruce Paltrow. And I mean, our dads were such close friends that we just sort of grew up. We've been with each other since we were born.
Yeah.
And I remember hanging out with Jake on the White Shadow set, like in the late 70s. And that was awesome. And you know, they had like their own gym on the set. It was awesome. So we'd do that. And then when we got a little older, and my dad was doing Hill Street Blues, and Jake's dad was doing Singing Elsewhere. They occupied the same building on the Mary Tyler Moore lot, the MTM lot. And so it was like, and those guys were like, I think they were 40 at the time. They were kids. They were having this extraordinary success. So that was like the loony bin. It was the fun house.
Was and back then, geez,
oh my God.
I can't imagine what you, now you can't do anything.
No. So, you know, you'd walk in and there would be grown men, you know, playing baseball in a hallway that was, you know, 7 feet wide. And you know, it was pure crazy. So Jake and I would go there every day of summer. We didn't want to go to summer camp. We wanted to go to our dad's job. Yeah. And Jake is now a filmmaker, writer, director.
He directed me on NYPD Blue.
And directed you. That's right. Mm-hmm. So we would go there. We would, and then that lot was fun. They would let us disappear. We would go. We'd go play on the old West Town. It had Gilligan's Island set was on that lot. Oh, and we would go down there. We would be the only people on the Gilligan's Island set out, you know, the exterior set, and just run around and just fuck around and do shit. It was heaven.
Who was after Ginger and who was after Marianne?
That's a good question.
Were you a Ginger guy or Marianne?
I was always a Marianne.
Okay.
Now that I'm older, I feel like I'm more Ginger, though.
Yeah, yeah. To those of you listening that didn't grow up in this kind of lifestyle,
I also really quite
not normal to go hang out on the Gilligan's Island set.
I don't sleep on Mrs. Howell, by the way. On Mrs. Howell.
Yeah, no, older women rock.
Yeah.
Older Cougar Town, baby.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it felt normal to us when we were kids. I don't even think it did. I think we knew how cool and lucky that was to be able to do that.
Did you know, like, back then, like, I want to do this, man. This is something I want to do.
Yes, we did. I think we both did.
Yeah.
We were super nerds about, you know, pop culture, 80s movies. And we also watched a lot of old movies, I think, because our parents, nobody made us do anything. That was what was cool. But Jake and I were super nerdy about we watched everything. My education is from television. I from watching old movies and TV, because I was a terrible student and I didn't really go to college all that much. So, you know, but you can learn a shitload of stuff from pop culture and reading, you know.
So
enough to read and then there you go.
So when you were young and all that, you know, like the era of your, you know, Stephen Bochco and Milch and NYP, like, were you young enough or old enough to realize what they were doing when that show was coming on? Like, because I mean, I remember but I wasn't living with it, you know?
Yeah.
How transformative that was for television?
It's funny. I was thinking about that recently because, you know, last year I went and made an NYPD Blue pilot, which didn't ultimately get.
I think it's because Detective Laura Murphy wasn't in it.
I think that's a big part of it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure of it, actually.
But I
started doing a lot of research around the time and I realized, oh God, it's really right when I was finishing high school and went to college and I could care less about anything at that point. I went to college. I was, like I said, I was majoring in bong loads and girlfriends. So, so the first couple years of that whole thing, I was aware of it. I knew what was going on, but it was a little lost on me. And so, you know, in going back and looking at all that happened and how groundbreaking that was at the time, but that, you know, they made a pilot and it didn't go on the air for over a year because all the affiliates had dropped out and boycotted and nobody was gonna, they weren't gonna air the show because it was only gonna air in like, I don't know how many affiliates, but such a small percentage of affiliates.
Right.
That it wasn't commercially viable. And it was just really scary for the network. And I mean, I don't remember exactly what happened, but they essentially said, well, you know, I think the mandate from David and my dad and everyone was like, well, we're going to walk away and we're never going to make another bit of TV for anybody ever again.
Yeah, right.
And they managed to fight their way on and take this thing on politically. And it aired in whatever, you know, 30% of the affiliates. And it hit so fast and so quick. And the world was so ready for that kind of a.
It was like a train wreck. I mean, I
remember progressive statement
coming from a family of cops. I mean, you know this. When I got the job, I mean, never shut up about it. Like my grandfather came. Before he passed away, I got to fly them to set. They met you. They met Dennis, and he literally would stop mm-hmm. people on the street and go, "Do you know my granddaughter? She's on NYPD Blue." Like I could have done anything else, and that's all they cared about because family of cops.
The best,
that was their religion. I mean, that was their homage, and especially nowadays, what's going on in the world? It's just sad to me. I think of that show sometimes and how many good cops there have been. Do you know what I mean? And what's going on now?
Oh
in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yes. It was just a different time. You know, I wonder if that could even be made right now.
Listen, I mean, there are good cops now. There were good cops then. There have always been good cops. That's one of the hardest jobs in the world. And there are, like every other walk of life in this world, there are shitheads.
Do you think that show could even be made right now? Power. Do you think anyone would touch a pilot about cops now?
Yes, but it would have to be the right way. And you know, I think that maybe that was a blessing in disguise that we didn't end up getting put on the air.
Maybe.
Because I'm not sure we would have survived that. And to be honest, we're talking about it again. And if we do it again, you really lean into the reality of what we're looking at right now.
And I think
you gotta go chin first.
I really do think if you put Laura Murphy in this one, it'll go.
I couldn't agree more.
I mean, she was
agree more.
She was only 30 when she, made Detectives.
I hear she's
hot.
32. I heard she's 32 in the new one.
Come on.
Weirdly enough, she only aged 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
since the last
it was like two years ago. So after that, you went on to direct. You've done like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Grey's Anatomy. I mean, you've done so much directing. Like, do you think, like, do you consider your first act? I mean, if there was one, do you think it was that NYPD? Like your first act?
That was my first act.
Know, metaphorically.
You know, my first act was more than that. I consider NYPD Blue to be school.
School.
It was so awesome to go to get a really incredible job and position that was based solely on nepotism at that point in my life. They believed in me and luckily you got to show up and do the job or you're not allowed to stay. And I was able to do the job.
Excellently, I add. You're very humble.
You.
I always, and you know, you hate when I say this, but you are one of the most talented directors I've ever worked with. And yes, the most humble, and you always make fun, nepotism and all that. But honestly, you are a brilliant director.
Thank you, Bonnie. That is very kind. And I only slightly hate it when you say that.
You cringe. You know, you're cringing right now.
I don't totally hate it when you say that.
Okay. But, I won't say it again.
But I got to direct 12 episodes of NYPD Blue on a show that had so much inertia. It was like, it was just, you know, that thing was going no matter what.
Yeah.
And there was such a support system and there was so much love. It was Mark Tinker and it was, you know, all these incredible producers and directors and writers and
Nikki
actors,
Wooten.
Nikki Wooten. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to go watch Dennis Franz do what he does so well every day. So by the time, you know, I think it was 3 seasons, right? 3 episodes, seasons 10, 11, and 12. I'd done 12, and then if you add that, the hour of Philly I'd done, that's 13 hours of episodic television that was kind of like just under the radar and watching how some of the best people do it. So I got to come out of that with experience. And so that's really almost in a funny way,
school.
That's when act one starts, because then I went and got to do shows that were,
then you had to go out on your own and not
be,
you know, Steven's son and actually prove that you could direct in other fields.
Yes, exactly. And had some really good experiences and got to do some fun shows and then came back and worked with my dad again. I worked with my dad a number of times over the years, and that's to this day, the great blessing of my life was to be able to have that experience working with him, because our work relationship was the coolest. It was, he would always say, you know, I can't do what he does and he can't do what I do. I'm no writer and he's no director. So he said, I always just left you alone to do what you do. And it was great. So there was always this really kind of, it was a very cool, interesting work relationship that we had. And that's separate apart from the fact that he was my best dude.
He was your best dude. I know. And
he was my best dude.
Sorry for your loss. You know, I loved your dad so much, man. And you named your little baby girl Stevie.
She is Stevie Ray Botchka.
No, no one that knew Botchka was. I mean, even just being in his aura for like a, because I was there at the end, and I was such good friends with you. But you know, towards the end, he would come down on basically, you know, every once in a while. But like, I was so, it was just the most kind, supportive. Like he really loved actors. You know, he never made you feel like
he was a phenomenal guy. He loved actors. He loved writers. He was the most ferocious protector of what he considered to be the, you know, the nucleus of what he was doing, which was his actors, his writers, his team, you know, all of his every facet. And so he would go to war on regular with critics and studios and standards and practice and all that stuff so that nobody else in the environment had to. And that was what was, that was the great lesson I saw and learned. He would say, you guys do what you do. If we're going to catch heat, I'll take all the heat. I'll fight those fights because I don't want you guys to have to go through that. I just want you to create stuff and make cool stuff and not be afraid to do what we do.
I
loved.
I wish I got to work with more people like him. I have to say, his also his book is amazing. If anyone wants to read it, Legends book about all these stories, Truth is the Only Defense, Stephen Botchko.
That's a good book.
It's an awesome book. No, it's an awesome book. So if anyone wants to read like real stories about Hill Street Blues and writing and going to war and going to war for actors and some pretty crazy stories, read that book separate. And Jesse, when's your next book coming out? Come on, we got to catch up.
I'm working on it.
Your diary.
It's in the works. Anytime now.
So that was like,
that's funny.
So first act was like school, and then what? And then what do you think, like, what was the transition? Like what happened? What was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome after that, you think?
Well, I would say the biggest hurdle was, I felt like the whole thing was cement. Like it was cemented in, like, oh, you know, this is great. I'm a working director in television and Hollywood. And so I'd gotten about 7-8 years down the road or whatever. And I'd worked and had a lot of experience and thought, you know what, I'm going to tap out for a second. I'm going to take some time. I met my first wife and we were going to get married and all that stuff. And I thought, this is here. Like this is, I think I took that for granted. This is here. And I thought if I just dip out for a minute and take a little break, cause I'd been doing an everyday job for over 10 years, it'll all be here when I'm ready to come back. And it wasn't. So it was such a hard fight to get back. And you know, to be honest, it's still a hard fight to just go and wrangle up jobs as a director. Yeah. I'd love to just say, hey, I'm up for directing, you know, can I come in and grab some directing gigs? It's hard. And so
that's what I say in the pod, the intro, like everything for me sounds like me. I mean, different, but everything was going great right up until the moment it wasn't going great. And I just,
there's always a moment where everything falls right off the table.
But I was like, I thought jobs, I mean, I was so lucky as an actress. I was the girl that everyone said, Bonnie always has a pilot, you'll be fine. And then, you know, I woke up one day and it's like, I'm in my 40s and I get fired, let go from my first show, which happens to every actor, never to me. And everything just seemed to hit the fan and it was all just gone. And it's wait, how does 20 something years, you know, it just went away. You know, it just went away.
But there's such a phenomenal lesson in it. I know you know that's it. And we can be self-deprecating and humble and all that shit. But there's still a level of hubris and all that. I had it. You had it.
Yeah.
Where you think, well, this is built in, man. You know, I can sort of do what I need to do here. I can be the sweetest, funnest person in the world and, you know, don't embarrass me now, stop it. But you think it's all going to stay forever and it just doesn't unless you hustle, and you got to hustle hard.
Do you think there was a part of you that stopped hustling? Because I admit.
Oh, for sure.
I admit in my intro, like that I suffered from depression. I gained weight. I was going out too much. I was partying too much. I was you know, my relationships were terrible. I was self-sabotaging. It affected everything. You know, it affected everything.
No, I've had that too in my life. I've done all those things. But yeah, there's no question about it. You know, I don't think anybody's ever accused me of being the hardest working man in show business ever anyway. I have a bit of a laissez-faire attitude about the whole thing, but we have worked hard and we do work hard. And anytime you take on one of these gigs, whether you're acting in a role, a series, if it's a one-off, if I'm working an episode of a show where I've taken a gig that's more long-term, it's such hard work. It's hard work. So we are working hard, but there's no question. I thought, man, this is a lot. I would love to just chill for a minute. And the minute you chill,
yeah.
it kind of kicks you in the ass.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that you can't find moments for yourself and take time, but if I had it to do all over again, the moment I thought, you know what, I'm having this really nice career, I'm gonna chill for a second.
Yeah.
Is exactly the time I should have mashed the pedal, because I regret that to this day, because I still think it's different. But slowly but surely, you know,
you fight your way back.
I gotta say, yes, for sure. I got to do this great series that I love for 3 years called Murder in the First.
Mm-hmm. Awesome series.
Which felt like felt like a comeback, because I was really proud of the show. I liked the show quite a bit. I liked the environment. I was, you know, the producer director on the ground every day. And again, that was almost, it was all those years later, but it was like a graduate school. Because right. it was a different level of responsibility than I'd ever experienced before, and that was great. And then between that, and then, you know, my dear friend who I went to high school with, Jed Whedon, he married his wife Marissa because she was Mark Tinker's assistant back in the NYPD Blue days, and we were all friends. This is like just after college, and we were all friends, and they met and fell in love, and they've been together for however many million years they've been together. And they were, you know, Jed was a musician, he wasn't a writer or anything, but they got sort of tapped to be ghost writers on the Avengers movie because Jed's brother is Joss Whedon, and they were incredible. They like hit it out of the park, and they didn't get any credit, you know, anything, but they got to go make a series for Marvel. And they created a series called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which ended up having this great 7-year run. And
our boy Henry.
But they would religiously hire me to do 2-3 episodes a season.
Wow.
And that was my only directing work for years. And to be honest, it was perfect. I got to go do this really fun show that was never the same thing twice. Sometimes you're in space, sometimes you're time traveling, sometimes you're on another planet, sometimes you're, you know, whatever. It was so fun and just different from anything I'd ever done. And that just sort of kept me afloat and alive. And
the schooling in act one kind of set you up for the act two, right? That was like the lessons you learned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm still learning lessons in act two, and think I will always be. But and so now, you know, what's kind of been interesting since my dad passed away 2 years ago, 2.5, is that he left this really incredible library of intellectual property behind. And he told me and his wife, Dana, he said, this, you know, this is here. This is for you guys. If there's something you can do with it, if something you want to do with it, if there's anything anybody else is interested in doing with it. And that's been thrilling to go look at all that stuff. And we have four different versions in development right now. And some are in really advanced stages of development. Some are a little earlier on, but there's so much interest in it there. It's so fun to go revisit these things. But this actually feels for real like act two, possibly.
This could actually be the second act.
Yeah.
That's so fabulous.
That's the part I'm excited about. And Dana, my stepmother, is we were always close. She's become such a good friend and partner in all of this. And, you know, we've bonded deeper over the fact that we each had the same favorite person in the world. And so we're doing that together. And I think we found a lot of comfort in each other in that, which has been fabulous. And, you know, she was the president of his company for a billion years.
I know, they worked together and they stayed in love and I mean everything.
She was an executive. So she's still such a fiery, incredible asset when you go into these rooms and you do all these negotiations and talk to these people. And she's brash and cynical at times, but she knows what the hell she's talking about. She's a lawyer. She's a politician. She's all these things. So I'm like, holy shit. What a blessing.
I know.
I could not do half of this stuff alone. I couldn't do any of it alone. And we've been lucky enough to get the interest of really interesting directors, writers, et cetera, to revisit some of these projects, but I'm so happy to be doing it with her. So that's been really fun.
That really is such a blessing. Out of all of that, like, you know, they say out of tragedy and pain, look at what's growing between you and Dana, like a closer relationship. Sure. And your dad left you more. There's more to do. There's a third act, a fourth act, a fifth act. Who knows?
Possibly. I'll take all the acts.
You'll take all the acts. Hey guys, just going to take a break. More with Jesse in just one sec. Hey guys, so this is a quick ad break. Before I do that, I just want to say, I've been doing this for 25 years? I have auditioned for so many voiceovers. I have never booked one, okay? Talking about second act, not one. I had to make my own podcast to do a voiceover. So here it is. Summer's over. Fall is here. I know. Can't believe it. And you've probably been locked up with your significant other for 7, 8 months now? I can't even keep count. You still want to look good. With Plexiderm, all you need is 10 minutes and you can look 10 years younger. Who doesn't want to look 10 years younger? It visibly reduces wrinkles, lines, and even eye bags. And results last for hours. So you can try a 6 application trial pack for $14.95 with free shipping when you visit triplexiderm.com. Use the code BELIEVE. Again, that's triplexiderm.com. Use the code BELIEVE, BLEAV, at checkout. You know what? Make those wrinkles and lines and bags disappear because nobody wants to see that. All right. I'm going to ask you some questions right now. I'm just going to do the speed round thing and you're going to answer me. You have no choice.
Well, you is can this like the Lipton style? Are you doing Lipton style here?
What is your favorite curse word? Douche. No. This is my own version. All right. It's very serious, this one though.
Okay, great.
Who is your favorite whack packer?
I've thought about this. Shit, it's Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
It's gotta be Beetle. It's Beat for sure. Yeah. But
anyone listening, we're Howard Stern fanatics, so hopefully someone got that question.
Eric is phenomenal. I'll go down that rabbit hole because I'll start to think about the nuances of other people. Honestly, I think Sour Shoes is possibly number two.
Possibly number two, Sarah. Ooh. I also love that you're the only person on earth that we leave each other voice notes that make no sense for the past 15 years. And we could just go he's the baddest cat.
we're totally lame, we're so lame. But at least we like it.
Okay. What was the favorite episode of television you ever directed? And if you don't say it's the one I was in, I'm going to edit this out, but you could just go for it anyway.
All right. Well, then it'll just be for us. Cause
pick one. No, I'm kidding.
I love you so much. I directed an episode of a show called Over There. It was an FX show about the Iraq War.
I love that show.
That nobody ever watched, which is such a bummer because it was during it was right in the beginning of the whole second act of the Iraq War. And it was such a good show. Anyway, I directed an episode early on with a young upstart named Rami Malek, who nobody had ever heard of before.
No, I never heard of him. I think he won an Oscar.
I'd like to think I had something to do with that. And it was incredible. It was an episode called The Prisoner. And the the troop of soldiers we were following essentially kidnapped somebody who they believed to have intel on where some missiles were, whatever. So it ends up being this kind of bottleneck episode where we're holding this kid hostage to get information from him. And then another brilliant actor named Michael Cudlitz played a colonel who was this incredible son of a bitch who ends up getting the information. Anyway, it was the hardest, coolest thing I'd ever done. I had to do, full blown fire attacks, and we were out on some ranch in the middle of nowhere and so much heat forever shooting it. And I kind of really didn't know what the hell I was doing, and it somehow turned out wonderful.
It was an awesome show. I watched it.
I stood on the shoulders of a lot of good talent on that episode, but what came out was really, really good. That's the one I keep coming back to. I watched it 2 years ago just to see if what I remembered was true, and it's still pretty good.
It is.
It's good.
Okay, yeah. What's the worst actor you ever worked with? And if you don't want to name names, is there a story? A mini story without naming names? You want to plead the fifth on that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit.
I know you have many.
I have a couple, but I don't want to name any names.
No, you don't. Don't name any names. I don't want to lose
you. Obviously, because I also care what people think about me. It's like my great flaw.
It's your great flaw that you're so kind.
I worked with a kid who I have no malice towards whatsoever. And in hindsight, I just feel terrible. He must feel terrible.
Jesse, you really are the biggest hearted person.
stop. But at the time, it was a bummer. But so this kid was showing up, he was just a guest star, by the way. Guest star on a show that I'm not involved with other than just being a guest director. And he's showing up 30, 40 minutes late every day. There was just a level of apathy that was so astonishing. And then when he would perk up, he would just sort of have some ideas that weren't that I didn't jive with necessarily, but that was fine. They actually started sending our second to go pick him up every morning because that was the only way they were going to get him in the makeup chair on time. So that's all going on, but whatever. It's sort of peripheral and I'm not really dealing with it too much. So one day we're shooting on an interior set that takes place in a cave. And so it's like smoke and dirt, cave. And it's just cave. It was so impressive. This, by the way, ends up being my second favorite episode I've ever directed, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
So we go in to shoot this young man's coverage, his close up, and he starts falling asleep in his takes. He's he's nodding off in his takes. And so I go, and this is now, it's a lot of takes that had been not good. And then the confirmation. Oh, my man is. It's also about 9:30 in the morning, so he's nodding off in his takes. And so, Bonnie, when I say it was one of those ones. It's like when it's so tight and the eye line, so you they put a dot in the mat box for you. So
you can't look away.
It's like right, right here. And so
you can't fake it.
So I go, fuck. Okay. So now you have to walk in. The way you have to walk into this set was come out around the where the monitors are, and you got to go down this life. There's one way in, one way out of the set, and it's long. And then you got to go into this one big sort of – everything's a dirt floor in here.
You're in Kabul. Cave.
Yeah. and then there's a second – sort of a second room with a curtain between the two, and he's gone back into there after I've called cut. What the fuck? Okay. So I go in and the whole crew is in the first thing, cameras, light, all the people. And I step behind the curtain now. And that's all that's separating me and the whole group. And I say, what's going on? How can I help you? And he's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, what's going on here? You just fell asleep in your close up. And I said, look, are you fucked up? Like, what's going on? And he starts to yell at me. I actually, there was a moment where I thought it could become physical. He starts to, he says, I've never been treated like this in my whole life. And he's yelling at me. And he said, how could you say that I worked so hard? And then he starts to weep. He starts to cry. And I'm sitting there. It's about a 5-minute conversation where I'm just saying, look, dude, I want to help you, but I don't know what to do here. I said, I think you need to leave the set. And, you know, so we kind of got away from this point where I thought possibly there was a physical altercation, but I don't know what was going to happen. And then I go to pull the curtain back from where I think everybody is right there on the other side, all feeling like, well, if something gets sideways, 5 people are going to come in and pull it. Yeah. This kid is much bigger than me and could rip my head off. I pull it back. They're gone. The whole set is a ghost town. There's not one fucking person there. Ooh. And I wander out and, you know, and then there's a bunch of people like way off deep into the shadows.
Yeah.
And this young actor left the set and there proceeded to be another hour or two of negotiations on how to get him back on to set.
And, let me guess.
All that stuff.
Let me guess. He's now an Oscar winner.
It was Rami Malek.
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding.
I knew it.
That was an interesting day at the
office. What? That's a kind story. Like I say, you're one of those directors that actually cares, and there are many others that do not behave that way. They do not say, "How can I help you?" They do not act like you.
I've got another one that I like too.
Okay, go ahead.
And I will not use this name of this very well-known actor.
All right, extremely I'll get it later, and I'll put it on my Instagram. Go.
And who advanced in age, like an older gentleman.
Mm.
I think at the time, probably in his late 70s. And he was a really difficult guy to work with. Like I was a very young director, and he's the only actor that ever gave me nightmares, ever. The only actor I ever had a dream about. And I was so scared of him. And he was so difficult. And we were shooting one night, and I won't tell you it's more fun if I tell you what the set we were shooting in, but that'll give too much away.
All right.
And we're shooting late, and it's like midnight, you know, we're trying to get off set, and we're doing a big turnaround in this giant set. So we're all standing around talking and whatever, and they're doing the lights, and I'm talking to him, and all of a sudden something catches my eye right out of the corner of my eye. And I look down on the rug where we're standing, and I see a tiny bag of cocaine hit the floor. And he just shuffles his foot like 2 inches over to cover it. And instead of me being like, what the fuck? Or like, oh my God, I'm so mortified. I don't want to mortify him. I was just like, literally was like, what, huh, what? Okay, oh, I'll be right.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't have gotten out of there faster. And I was like, oh, well, A, that makes a lot of sense as to why he's such a pain in the ass nightmare. And B,
I just like the slow-footed, like,
oh my God, it's just like
slow motion. That happened to me also on a set too once. I won't give away the name. It literally fell out of his pocket. And then there was a deep dive of three, like a gaffer and a grip, they all deep dove and they grabbed for it. And we went into the hands of someone else and they were like, finders keepers. And they all just walked away.
Oh, because the dropper didn't know they dropped it.
No, he kept walking on it.
Yeah,
the whole crew, they were like, oh, well, got it. No, it's mine. No, whoop, finders keepers. And I was like, oh shit, you're not going to tell them. They're like, hell no.
Oh my God.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story.
Yeah, that one was pretty good. I've dined out on that one once or twice.
Okay, let me ask one more question.
Okay.
You just said, so the first act was school, second act was, you know, coming back, what you did after that. So what do you think, like, what would you imagine or could you imagine if you had your druthers, your third act is going to be like? Like, what would you like to be happening?
That's a good question. I was just thinking about this the other day because we're working on right now. I mean, I've never had this. I'm working on developing at least 4 things and maybe more. I love the idea of, I used to always, if I got involved in a show, I would either be a director and come in, and I love the job of being a director for hire. You show up, you get three, it's a 3-week job. It could be real hard. It could be really fun. It could be a total shit show, but you're in and you're out, and that's pretty fun. Or I've always been kind of like a producer director, and that's a real everyday gig. You're up at the crack of dawn and you're going home late.
Family. It's also your second family.
It is. You spend more time with them than you do with your own. So you better, you might as well make it a good environment.
Yeah.
But so I really love this idea now of being involved in a different way, to be a producer on some shows going forward. And being there, but I'm not necessarily there all the time, all day, every day. And just sort of being a part of multiple things at once. That excites me. I've never really been able to do that before. And that would be really cool.
Do you have any interest in doing a feature? No?
I used to a lot more than I do now.
Mm-hmm. Well, TV is the best content there is anyway.
Yeah. I think doing a feature would be phenomenal. It would just have to be the right thing at the right time. I would love to. There's no question about it.
There's nothing you can't do, Jesse.
Well, that's nice of you to say. But there's a few things I can't do.
Really?
I can't even balance my checkbook. So.
Well, I can't either. But everybody's good at something, as my boyfriend says. And you're good at directing. And
thank you. I'm good at talents.
Huh?
We've got a couple talents.
We do. Listen, we have a couple of talents. You know, I have some skills. I have some skills.
You do.
I love you so much. Thank you. I can't tell you what an honor it is to interview you, someone who I've always looked up to and admired, and who you've been such a good friend to me when I've had those. Man, how many times have you talked me off the ledge when I was like, "Is it me? You know, am I ever going to work again?" And see, I get all emotional when I talk about this, but like, it's true. You know, for people out there listening, I just want them to know that, like, whatever it is, you know, things could go away, but you know, there's always another chance. You can reinvent yourself. Don't give up. You know, that's kind of why I wanted to do this show.
Of course. And I'm glad you're doing this show. I think it's a really great, smart thing that you're doing. It's an important thing to explore. You're bringing it to people so that they can see it and experience it. But this is as cathartic as it gets too for you.
Well, for me,
I think what you're doing is phenomenal. Thanks. Excited. And there is always a way. There's always a way
the comeback is stronger than the setback, baby.
Yeah, that's exactly right, kid. That's
the t-shirt. Even though, in full disclosure to whoever's two people are listening, I did call my agents last week and cry and go, am I ever going to work again? You know, but that's the typical actor, you know, but everyone's saying that right now anyway, but it just feels like we said, when you work for such a long time, and you just never expected the bottoming out, you know, it does put a lot in perspective. So I have learned a lot, you know, like you said, you learned a lot.
We learned a lot, and there's a lot more to learn. We're going to be great. You're going to be fucking great.
You're going to be great. Do you want me?
Love you.
I love you. Do you want people to follow you on your social media? You're very private.
Sure. You can follow. I mean, it's not private. So.
It's not? Because you do have a ridiculous, guys, if you are into absolute inappropriate hysterical humor like Jesse and I are, his Instagram is one of the funniest Instagrams out there.
It's at Jesse Botchko.
At Jesse. I thought it was J, but at Jesse Botchko. But
it's JesseBochco. Instagram, because I'm not on anything but Instagram.
Instagram, yes. And you, very irreverent, very funny, always hysterical.
I'm basically just stealing other people's humor, but it's fun to do it.
I'm constantly showing Dave do you follow him yet, Jesse? I'm constantly leaning over going, look at this.
Come on, Dave. We gotta get you on there, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring Dave on. He's gonna be my sidekick soon. He's sitting over there like, okay. I love you, Jesse. Thank you for doing this.
I love you. Can I get you and Dave to like buy me a sparkly water one time or something?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, let's figure out a time. We'll hang out.
Let's do it.
I'm sure all your listeners want to hear us making plans. It's really
yes,
fun.
They do. They want to know that we have lives, big lives.
Yeah.
All right, Jess.
Bigly. I love you.
Love
Thank
you.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. God, I love that guy. Thank you, Jesse Bochco. He's such a great guy, and he has so many amazing stories. And talk about humility. I mean, that is an example of someone I worked with that is the most humble person and so grateful for everything he has and taught me so much about being that way on the business. I'm truly honored I got to talk to him. Thank you, Jesse, so much. So, guys, I just want to remind you, please subscribe, share, comment, like, leave a 5-star review because I want to keep going and I have many, many more people that have awesome stories that I want to share with you. And thank you for being here with me today. This was really awesome. I've always wanted to do this. So I'm going to go celebrate right now. My boyfriend, thank you, Dave McLean, my producer. He's sitting there shyly saying, you can laugh. He produced this, all of this. So thank you to my love for doing that because I wouldn't have done it without him. And I just can't wait to hear all your stories. And please write to me, whether it's on my Instagram, Bonds Somerville, or SecondAct_pod on Instagram, and ask me some questions. I'd love to answer your questions. I'd love to hear from all of you and tell some of your stories. So thanks for being here. Can't wait for the next one. And remember, don't ever, ever, ever give up, because you never know when your second act is right around the corner.